All right, welcome to Pre-Sources. So, there was a missionary who came to a large church and gave a presentation about the needs on a faraway mission field. At the end of his presentation, he asked for volunteers to go and teach school to these poor, needy children. And nobody volunteered. He was getting ready to leave. He was feeling pretty down about this until a young man came up to him on crutches. This young man only had one leg. And he said, sir, I'd like to volunteer for the mission field. The missionary said, you've only got one leg. And the young man said, how many two-legged guys volunteered? The missionary said, none. The young man went, became a very successful missionary. How many of you all have two legs? Oh, good. So the point of this class is that you already have a lot of resources. A friend of mine last November was coming home from work, and his wife called and said that their 33-year-old son had a really bad headache. Could he pick up some medicine on the way home? So he did. And he got home, and his son was there vomiting incessantly. Only a few hours later, his son was basically a vegetable in the hospital. He'd had an aneurysm in the back of his head and was dead. His friend's name was Kirby. Many of his friends and family gathered around him, his church people, his colleagues. There were people who were there for him during this time. There's people who are there for you. As a teacher, becoming a teacher is not a breaking away from your past life and suddenly entering a completely new realm of colleagues. You need to keep those old friends. Okay. When I was about 18, I was at a blood drive, and a nurse there began asking me about how easy it was for a young man to be a Christian. I said, it's not easy at all. Not in this world. It's pretty tough. So she said, how do you do it? How do you resist temptation? I said, well, honestly, I don't all the time, but I try. She said, how do you stand all the pressure? I said, well, the church is there for me. The church is there for you too. And so is God. So the goal today is to identify and discuss pre-existing sources of wisdom, inspiration, and ideas for teachers. For those of you who haven't taught very long, I want to reassure you that you're not diving into this all by yourself, and you're not diving into it. You may have no experience at teaching yet, but you have experience at life, okay? So our takeaway for today is that you already have many resources. Keep them and use them. Now, I've thought about doing this. I haven't. But if you're a first-year teacher and you wore a uniform to work normally, it might be interesting to your students, probably not the first day of school, but one day of school, to show up in your uniform and teach them like you used to on the job. Now, my students really enjoy watching me with a pencil behind my ear. They think it's just hilarious that my ears hold pencils, because theirs don't. And they've asked me, you know, when did you first learn that you could do that? Well, when I worked in a mini barn shop. And as a teacher, I use a pencil a lot. And it somehow just ends up behind my ear. This is where it goes. And there's all kinds of things you could do. You could be teaching your students about a lever or force or all kinds of things with a hammer and so on. There's nothing wrong with using things from your previous experience to teach your students. You could be using a tri-square to teach them right angles and so on. If you all worked in a bakery, you may just show up with one of these and use it to show your students that you know a little bit about that and so on. So you do have resources. You have experience at life. And honestly, you're going to relate to your teaching based on your past. I do. I relate to my teaching based on my experience in the past. And you're going to do that too. And that's just fine. That's actually a good thing. Okay? So use that. One of our main resources as teachers is people. And one of the most important people, actually no, I should say the most important person, is God. And yes, God is a person. He needs to be a person to you as a teacher. Philippians 4 verse 19 says, "But my God shall supply all your need through his riches in Christ Jesus." And if you just think about that for a little bit, I have a question for you. Particularly for those of you who are first-year teachers. Has God supplied your needs in the past? Has he? I want to see a raise of hands. How about that? God supplied your needs in the past. Is God going to quit because you're teaching now? No. He's going to be there. Let me warn you, though, that God can supply your needs in ways that you don't expect, okay? So, for instance, last year, we were here at WFTI. And I'm just going to be honest. I have a phobia about speaking in front of adults, okay? So y'all are scaring the tar out of me right now. And I went one whole night without sleeping. And the next day, I was supposed to talk. And I didn't wake up because I didn't sleep. So I got up that morning and I knelt beside the bed in the RV there. And I said, "God, today's on you. I'm out of gas. Any good thing that comes out of today is going to be because of your strength. But, you know, it wouldn't hurt if you helped me wake up. I'm pretty tired." And you know what God did? He's really creative. He turned off the hot water. I was wide awake after that experience. I decided that, you know, because you just have to be careful what you ask God about, because he is going to answer, okay? It just might not be what you expected. All right. Parents. During my first year of teaching, I had a student who was very rebellious. And I struggled to know how to deal with him. It seemed like when I corrected him, he just became even more rebellious. And one evening, his father came to the schoolhouse and talked to me. And he said, "Jonah, would you let me take care of this? Would you quit trying to do anything and just let me take care of it?" It's quite a bit of rescinding my own, you know, handle on this thing. But I said, "Yeah, I'll let you." You know, that whole thing turned around without me doing anything. Let me tell you something. The parents are on your side. They want you to succeed. Okay, they're scary, I know. Just go to your first PTA and shake in your shoes. It'll be fine. But they really do want you to succeed because they want their children to succeed. So they're on your side. Your school board. I hope some of you all have had the privilege of meeting Brother Paul Summers. He's here today. He's my school board chairman. He and another brother named Simon Graber have affected my teaching dramatically. In fact, when we had a first grader getting ready to start school, they said, "We're not going to get a second teacher. You're going to be teaching first grade next year." And I said, "No, I'm not. I'm going to quit." And they said, "Sorry, you can't." I'm not joking. They didn't let me quit because of first grade coming, and I was scared to death of teaching first grade. I've heard all these, you heard all these stories about, you know, first grade teachers messing up the students for life and all this kind of thing. I was trepid of this experience. I'd done very few things that were as scary as teaching a first grader, but I did. And I've done it, I think, about 7 years since then, and I love teaching people to read. I'm looking forward to teaching first grade again next year, along with a number of other grades. Your school board really is on your side. They do want to help you. And if you get a chance, if you've appreciated anything I said while I was here, go ahead and thank Brother Paul for it, because he's got a good part in me becoming what I am. Yourself, you're one of your own, I want to impress this upon you, you're one of your own greatest assets. Whether it's because you've got experience in a bakery, or if you've had some experience as a teacher, I suppose we've all had experience as students, right? And so you know a little bit about about school. Think with me a little bit about Corrie ten Boom. Anybody know about Corrie ten Boom? You know who Corrie ten Boom was? Okay. How many people did Corrie ten Boom have to rely on after her sister passed away in the concentration camp? How many other people were there for her to lean on? Anybody? Aside from God? I don't think so. But she had her own self and God. There was a man named Viktor Frankl who by choice ended up in a concentration camp. He had a chance to come to the United States, get away from Hitler. But he chose to stay at home, care for his parents. And because of that, he went into a concentration camp and he knew he was going to go there. He too came through victoriously. And he's made this statement that we cannot control what happens to us, but we always are able to control our response. And that's one thing that you always have control over. You don't have control over the students you're getting. They might all be dyslexics, okay? So, you know, if one out of five students is dyslexic, we could maybe say, you know, one out of five schools will have all dyslexics, maybe. I don't know. But you don't have any control over that. You don't have any control over whether your parents are the nice ones who support you and show up with sugar cookies after school and everything, or whether the ones who send you the note that say, you know, when I was in school, my teacher did it this way. And so on. You have zero control over that, but you do have control over how you respond to every one of those situations that comes up. So you're one of your own best resources, your co-teachers. The year before I started teaching, one of my co-teachers, the school that I was, it was in our community, had some issues. And because of that, when I started teaching, I was very conscientious, overly conscientious about my relationship with my two female co-teachers. In fact, I didn't talk with them at all for the first 6 weeks. And that's not recommended, okay? I'm not holding that up as a sign. In fact, it kind of caused a lot of issues. And finally, just not long before our first parent-teachers meeting, they came walking into my room, and they parked themselves on chairs right in front of my desk there. And they said four words that will make every man's knees quake and his heart nearly stop. That they came up there and they said, "We need to talk." You know, we did. We talked. And it was a good thing that happened. It needed to happen for 6 weeks. Okay. Your co-teachers are, you know, bounce your million-dollar ideas off of them. Maybe they might think they're only penny ideas and that kind of thing. They are there to help you. Your students are actually very helpful as well. Don't be afraid of asking your students to do things for you. They're often very willing. They can be helpful. Your own family. Most of you probably have moms and dads who are available and they want you to succeed as well. They're willing to listen to your problems. I would be very careful about asking them about something that you should be talking to your school board about. But especially personal problems, personal struggles. Don't be afraid of calling your own parents. Stay in touch with them. They want to know what's happening. And they're concerned about you. And your friends. If you're leaving your home community to go teach somewhere else, don't drop your friends. You're going to need them about January. Okay. So keep them. And they need you too. Okay. They don't want you to just go away and have this wonderful time teaching school where they're stuck in the bakery baking their brains out every day. Okay? They need you as well. Any other people-related resources or anything you all want to add right now? You're up for a little bit here. Don't be scared to talk. All right, we'll move on. Books. There are many, many books to help you. First, of course, the Bible. And as teachers, the very next one is teacher's guides. Read the fine print. I just found out recently that I had taught a course for, I think, about 8 years the wrong way. My students had still learned it, but I hadn't taught it the way that it was intended to be taught. And when I finally sat down and read the entire teacher's guide and realized what I was supposed to be doing, I felt pretty, thick-headed that I had done it so long the wrong way. Publishers. Publishing houses, if you don't understand something in the teacher's guide or in the material you're trying to teach, they have customer service people who you can call and who will try to walk you through those kinds of things. Don't try to teach material that you don't feel comfortable with. It's okay to call and talk to them. If you're teaching rod and staff, there is a there's a place called Teacher's Treasury that has a bunch of outlines for rod and staff science and history. If you don't know about that, I do plan to put a copy of their order form on the resource table after this topic, and you can look at that and see if there's anything there that's interesting to you. Lamp and Light has a school filing system that I highly recommend because schools need to keep good records, and it costs $3.25, I think. So it's probably within your school budget, I think. All right. Handbooks. Your school most likely has this book, and it's a big book. It's a thick book, but you're not required to read it prior to the first day of school. However, I highly recommend that you browse through it prior to the first day of school, and that after the first day of school, you go back to it and look through. It has a lot of helpful information. The Seven Laws of Teaching. Brother Jonathan's going to go over that. I'm not going to tell you a lot about that. The Seven Laws of the Learner, the book that he read from a little bit in one of the topics. Eastern Mennonite Publications has a small book called Principles for Teaching. I noticed that Shop of Shalom has copies of those there. That's also a helpful one. The book, The First Days of School, that Brother Jonathan showed you the other morning. And the list goes on. There are many handbooks available that are helpful to you. There are reference books. Get familiar with the reference books that are available at your school. Your dictionaries, your encyclopedia set. One of the things that I should ask, just to see if any of those of you who are teaching for a little while already know. Jaden, do you know that the year of printing of your encyclopedia set? You need to know that. Okay, I'm going to tell you why. Because up until just a few years ago, my students were using an encyclopedia set printed in 1977. Okay, so I had to keep that in mind when I asked them to look up something that took place, for instance, the Challenger disaster, when the Challenger space shuttle blew up. It's not going to be in those encyclopedias because it happened after that. All right? Or it would be futile to ask them to look up terrorism. There's very little in a 1977 copy of encyclopedia about that. You need to know when your books were published. Same thing with a dictionary. If you have an older dictionary and you tell your children to look up the word chip, it probably won't mention computer chip. Right? It's going to be missing some things. And you need to know some of those things. So be familiar with the reference books that are in your classroom. Teachers should be very quick to say three words. I'm going to test you and see how teacher savvy you all are. What does discombobulated mean? Anybody know the three words you're supposed to say? Look it. Go ahead. Look it up! If you don't know what it means, don't guess. Well, I think maybe it means having messy hair. Okay, you know. It actually would mean something similar to that. But my point is, don't just try to be don't be your student's encyclopedia, dictionary, Bible dictionary, and concordance. If there's a book on the shelf over there and your student asks you a question that book has the answer to, say, look it up. My students occasionally will do this and then this. they know the answer. They know what's going to be, what they're going to get told. So be familiar with your reference books. Periodicals. The Christian School Builder and other periodicals like that are very helpful. Have lots of good ideas in them. Use your library. I don't know that I feel this strongly. I've heard speakers say that teachers should know their local librarian by name. Mine don't. I don't know my local librarian by name, but they do recognize me, I think. I do caution. I mean, library books are not something that you should be bringing into your classroom without some screening, but when you are researching a specific a specific subject, for instance, several years ago I researched California rice and the process in which it's grown and so on, the library was a great place. They had a whole book that was about nothing but rice grown in California, and it was a good book, and I learned a whole lot of things about it. For example, did you know that they were planting rice with airplanes in California in 1917? The airplane had barely been invented, and they were already using it on farms. They still do. Still plant rice from airplanes there. And the internet. And some of you younger teachers are probably very familiar with using the internet. I'm going to tell you something about the internet. And that is, prior to the internet, there was this theory in evolution. And it was that if you have 1 million monkeys in front of 1 million typewriters, and they're just randomly typing, that eventually some of them will come up with works of Shakespeare. Okay? The internet is proof that that's not true. Okay? Anybody can write anything and put it on the internet. Do not believe everything you read on the internet. Don't use that as a reference source that you would consider concrete. It is typically subjective information. What I mean by that is that most of what's written there is quite biased. So I don't recommend Googling very many things. However, I will tell you something. There are a couple sites that are pretty good for teachers. Right? One of them is Hubble's site. If you haven't ever gone there, it's a good site. If you've heard about the Hubble Space Telescope, pictures taken from the Hubble Space Telescope are public property. We helped pay for those pictures. They are there for you to get to show to your students, and they are some amazing pictures. There are several other sites that would be devoted to Christian science. One of them would be the Institute for Creation Research, or ICR. Those are some sites that are helpful. But as a rule, be very, very careful with using the internet as a reference source. You're up again. Questions, comments about helpful books? I know there's some experienced teachers in here, and you use books too. Don't be scared to raise your hand and tell me something that I missed. If not, we'll keep moving. Objects. As far as I know, all of you will probably have a black or a whiteboard in your classroom. You should use it often. If for nothing else, at least to brighten your students' day. Okay? It's a wonderful resource for you to use. Your students should be able to expect there to be things on the black or whiteboard when they walk into the schoolroom. And they should be, I think it's their right to see you using it throughout the school day. Paper. Wonderful invention. You know that paper used to be made from grandma's old dresses? It's only been about 150 years that we've had paper easy to use like we have it today. Use lots of it. It's useful for so many things. If nothing else, you could make paper airplanes out of it and so on. But use it. It's something that your students are familiar with. So how many pieces of paper do you think it would take to cover the outside of a globe? Well, your students they can easily relate to these two items. And suddenly you have them thinking and wondering, well, did you know there's a way to calculate that? If you find out, you know, what the surface area of the globe is and what the surface area of the piece of paper is, and we can figure it out, okay? If I remember right, it's almost 5 pieces of paper. You wouldn't think that just looking at the globe, but you can figure that out. But use paper. It's a wonderful thing. Now, this is a wonderful item. It's called the world's first calculator, okay? And it has a delete button on the top, all right? That you can use as often as you want. It's the world's best computer, in fact, as far as I know. Doesn't have, you can use as many, you can put as many zeros on it as you want. It doesn't matter. Okay? So, use pencils. And pencils can be used for all sorts of things. For example, using a pencil to drop into a glass of water to show how light bends as it passes through water. We use pencils for all sorts of things. Using a pencil to show a lever or to use it for a wheel. They're useful for so many things in your classroom. Your class table. I noticed some of the class tables here were semicircles. You can use that to help teach your students about a semicircle. Or in this case, if this was my class table, I would use it to teach them about rectangles, about plane geometry, about things that are rough and smooth, colors, white and black, plastics and metals. Ask them at what temperature they think this table would melt. Make them think about it. It's a familiar object to them, but it's useful. Their lunches. You can, remember that. For those of you who are in here, an orange, very familiar thing, something they can eat. And you can use it to teach them all sorts of things. And if you happen to be teaching fractions, you need to have a banana. Okay? Bananas are extremely useful fruit. You can use a yogurt cup taken out of one of your students' lunches to teach about volume and weight. Ask them. Is this item sold by volume or weight? Well, you look at a yogurt cup, and most of the time it says 4 ounces, right? Rather than 1 cup. And you tell them that's the difference. If you had a cup, it would fill the whole cup, but it doesn't. Most of the time, the yogurt cup isn't even full. And so on. Gravel. I think I mentioned this once already. I'm going to say it again. Gravel is useful in teaching division, addition, subtraction, multiplication, algebra. You name it. You can teach it with gravel. I know because I've done it before. The clock. Clock is a very useful tool for teaching all sorts of things, including angles, by the way, and telling time. This is a wonderful clock. I just noted, I stole it from a classroom in here. I noticed that as you turn the minute hand on this one, the hour hand actually goes around, so it's always... moves correctly. Use a fake clock of some kind. They're very useful. Coins. I think teachers should have coin collections. Anybody know what that is? It's big, right? What is it? Wait. Isn't this a room full of teachers? Okay, here we go. And what is it? How about this? Anybody know what this is? Yes. Yes, it is. Very good. All right. How about this? Figure out what that is. What is it? It's a dollar coin. It's what's called the silver dollar. It's a silver dollar. Anybody know what this one is? Half dollar. Thank you. Very good. Sorry. I thought I had my trick coin in here. I have a euro stuck in my box, too. It's almost exactly the same size as a quarter. And I'll give my students a handful of coins and throw it in there with them and have them try to count the money. And they'll get to it and look at it. But you have coins there. If your students are learning to count money, don't just say, you know, how much would you have if you had $3 and three quarters and a half dollar and so on. Instead, just go ahead and hand them a handful of money and say, would you go ahead and count that, please? And go on talking, and they're going to be engaged in figuring out what's going on, and they're going to get the feel for money. Did you know that money is made so blind people can count it? I've taught my students how to count coins in their pockets or with their eyes closed because the penny is smooth, the dime is rough, then the nickel's smooth, and the quarter's rough on the outside. And they're different sizes and so on. A tape measure. Now, this is an interesting tape measure, and I think every teacher should have one. Peter, you want to tell the others what's interesting about this tape measure?
It's got inches and centimeters.
Yes, it's English and metric. You ladies can take a look. Basically, you pass it back and I'm going to notice, so it makes it easy for my students to recognize the difference between a yard and a meter. If you want to just pass it back there. And did you count that? Thank you. How much? $2.51 because they're worth it. There was a gold dollar in there and silver. All right. Measuring cups, jars. How hard is it for you to find a one-gallon jug or a quart jar? And my students love to go fill up four-quart jars and dump them in the gallon just to see if it really does fit. And so on. Or two-pint jars and fill a quart jar. But you should have those in your classroom. A kitchen scales. I think this kitchen scale set me back about $4. And every year when we get to measuring ounces and grams and so on, it doesn't take a whole lot of effort for me to get the students to start weighing things. They'll start dumping coins in and try to get it to spin around a couple times and all that kind of good stuff. But just have a kitchen scales there. You let them have an idea of how much things weigh. How many of your schools will have a microwave in them? Anybody know? Did you know that you can use a microwave to teach about light? When you get to the electromagnetic spectrum, for those of you who will be teaching upper grades, you can use the microwave in that. For example, here's a coffee cup. Most likely your schools will have coffee cups too. And I'm going to ask you a question. If you fill this coffee cup with water and you put it beside an empty one in a microwave, which one will get hot if you set the microwave at 2 seconds? Which one will be hotter at the end of the 2 seconds? I mean, not 2 minutes, sorry. I'm not going to answer the question because I want you to figure it out for yourselves. But those are simple things that you have in your classrooms that your students will become easily engaged in. A mirror. It's already been mentioned about doing things in front of a mirror. Your classrooms may not have mirrors, but chances are a bathroom does. You can prop the door open, take the students in there, and have them talk in front of a mirror. And they'll laugh, of course, at themselves and so on. But it's a good exercise. An egg carton. Y'all eat eggs, I hope. There's no vegetarians in here. Get an egg carton to teach dozens, and then cut it in half to teach half dozens. It's a very, very cheap method of teaching, but it's useful. A globe. I hope all your classrooms have globes in them, and you get your students used to looking at a round earth. I heard just recently that about 3% of the people in the United States still think the earth is flat. I struggle to get over that. Who let them think that as children? Somebody failed them. The wall map. Something that you can point to and say, yeah, right here is the Strait of Gibraltar. And your students start to get those concepts of the relationship of here and there. Or, you know, Brother Aaron was going over to Bangladesh. It's right there. And so on. A blueprint. Most of you probably work in areas where someone has a construction business. Chances are there's a leftover blueprint hanging around somewhere. Bring one into your classroom. Your students will thoroughly enjoy scale models and learning about scales and so on. If they get to actually measure it on a blueprint, that's a real blueprint, instead of just looking at their books and so on. Tools of your trade, I already talked about that. Collections. If you have a hobby and you're a rock collector, bring your rocks along. And pets. Talk about your pet. It's likes and dislikes and whatever. Those are objects. You could even bring your pet along to school, maybe, if it was, you know, like a tiger or something. All right. Any other objects that you think should be in classrooms to help teach students and make life come alive to them? Yes?
Prism.
A prism. Yes, I actually didn't bring mine along. But yes, you should have a prism.
I just like to have one sitting on the windowsill.
Yes, yes. My students love to watch the... It's there, and they'll be like, oh, the rainbow moved over there, and so on.
Actually, I got one that's hooked up to a little solar-powered motor, so I put the suction cup in the window.
Oh, yeah.
At a certain time, actually a little later,
Yeah.
Making radios go.
Yeah. Very good. Yes, you should have a prism. They're also an inexpensive thing. I think I put my gyroscope away. Some of you all are a little too far away to get to enjoy it, but I think teachers should have a gyroscope in their classroom. That's just a wonderful tool to teach about centripetal force. Anything else? Any other objects? If not, we'll go to locations. You're all going to have a schoolroom. And in that room, there are all sorts of things you can use for teaching. For example, in this room, you could use the windows for teaching about surface area. For example, this wall, if we were going to figure out how much paint we needed to paint the wall, we would figure the total area of the wall, subtract the windows and the door, and then we would need to add the area of the casing of the windows. That's actually a rather complicated process. But your students will enjoy doing it because it's something familiar to them and it's real. They can touch it, see it, feel it. So use your own schoolroom. Use your school building. The outside of the building can be used to teach things like trigonometry. You can use the gable end of the building to teach some about the angles, rise and slope, run and so on. Your playground. Use your playground. Put a basketball out there and then take a BB somewhere to show how far the earth is away from the sun. It's actually pretty far. I haven't done that in quite a while. But that's something enjoyable to your students. And then the great outdoors. You should often tell your students about local things, or even take them outside for a little nature walk. It's amazing how much they can learn in a 15-minute walk on your own school grounds when they're looking for things to learn about instead of just running around screaming and playing. Surprising how many types of moss, grass, bugs, and everything my students can find in only a short period of time when they're intentionally looking for it. Be aware of your local land features. This is a picture of Yosemite Valley, and use it to teach your students about glaciers in this case, and so on. If you're living here, you can use Crater Lake to teach about volcanoes and Mount St. Helens and so on. Use the student's dwelling place. Ask them occasionally, when you're talking about personal hygiene, I'll ask my students, so if I went to your house right now, is your room clean? And they, a couple of them one time after school, they asked, are you actually going to come over? I think they were a little concerned, but yes. And then I think every teacher should have a quiet place, somewhere where you go to be alone. You're going to need one. If you don't already have one, if you're going somewhere new to teach, find one. A creek or somewhere where you can go and just be alone. You're going to need that time. Any other locations that you can think of that teachers need or can use? I'm running out of time, so we're going to keep moving. Memories, your childhood. If you want your students' attention, say, when I was a boy or when I was a girl, talk about your own school days. My students love to hear about my school days. Unfortunately, there's a lot of negative stories about my school days. Talk about your teen years, about when you were growing up, what you experienced. They enjoy hearing about that. Stories from your own family. Places you've been. If you've traveled to another state, another country, another part of the world, tell your students about it. People you've met. If you've met an important person, talk about it. Or maybe you just met someone interesting like Mr. Verlin. You can tell your students about him too. Failures. My students love this bike story that took place with me. I was riding my bike down a big mountain. It was big to me, you know. Now I look back at the mountain, it wasn't nearly that big. But as I went flying down this mountain, I realized that I was losing control of the bike. And finally the bike hit a rock and I went sailing, flailing my arms through the air, nose diving toward rocks and dirt. Landed, you know, bone crushing force and everything. And after several minutes of abiding on the ground, enjoying the solitude and tears involved, and hoping someone would just come and pick me up and, you know, tell me I was going to be okay, I got myself up and walked to the house. And my mom put me back together again, and I promptly walked back outside, got my bike, and went to the top of the mountain again. I use that story to teach my students about perseverance. It might be a little bit of blind faith, but it's just the idea. Just because something went wrong doesn't mean we don't go ahead and try it again. Go again. Of victories that took place. A friend of mine had a sister who, at a very young age, was diagnosed with leukemia, and after about 2 years, she passed away. It's very shattering for us. She was one of my classmates. However, her father, who was unsaved at the time, only shortly after that was also diagnosed with cancer. And partly because of her death, he gave his heart to the Lord again, recommitted his life to the Lord before he died. That's a victorious story that I like to tell. Sometimes God has answers to the things that we don't think make any sense. Go ahead and tell your students about accidents that you've had. I told you all about the time that my truck brakes gave out at the top of a hill. I didn't realize so many things could go through your mind in seconds. You hear about people talking about their life flashing before them. I don't know that it was quite my whole life, but it was an awful lot of it. And I did quite a few things in my truck, but I still think there were some angels there helping me as I came down to the T-junction, and I turned the wheel of my truck, and it leaned and leaned and kept leaning until the top of the load actually dumped off of the truck onto the road, and the truck came back right side up again as I turned uphill. By the way, this was a truck that had no seat belts and no driver's side door either. Had it actually capsized, I probably would have been turned to hamburger. But God took care of me. That's a story I tell my students, just about God's care. Tell them about your own misconceptions as a child and so on. You know, it was a long time before I realized that a spouse was not a furry animal with a tail. I seriously thought that's what it was, okay? And everyone just took for granted that I knew because, you know, it's in the books. It says spouse, and mine isn't, by the way, just in case you were wondering, okay? Ideas. Your students are going to want to know your goals. Where are you headed? What's your goal in life? Your godly worldview. When world events take place, what do you think about them? What do you say about world leaders, about war, or about elections, or about history? How do you feel about those things? Your students want to know. They want to know about your confidence in God. When something scary happens in your community, or if there's a storm outside, the wind starts blowing and the schoolhouse starts shaking, are you the first one out the door? Or you say, you know what, students, God's got this under control. It's okay. We can have confidence in God. Your love for children. You know, people who make blueberry pie get to pick which blueberries they put in the pie. You don't get to pick which blueberries walk in your classroom door. Love the ones that come in your door. Okay? Love children. Your humility in relating to your authority, your school board, church leaders, parents, so on. Other teachers. I was hoping to have a little time of sharing here. It looks like we're going to run out of time. But while you're here at the Institute, I suggest that you do two things. That you make some new friends, actually lots of new friends. The other thing is, especially if you're a novice teacher, find a mentor. Get a phone number, somebody that you can call this school year to ask questions, and then do that. Trust me, there are experienced teachers who will gladly help you because we want you to succeed as well. Takeaway once again, you have many resources. Keep them and use them. Thank you for your attention. I would love to give you another chance to ask questions, but if you have more questions, put them in the question box. All right.